From Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guests, producers of Sharkwater Extinction, Brian and Sandy Stewart.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And the storyteller, Christopher Rivas. I am Mark Legere, and now your host, the MC, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am so excited about this show. This show is special in some very heartwarming ways and in some exciting ways in that there's a call to action for all of us, and now's a great time to get behind what we're going to be talking about. I'm inspired and happy to share the inspiration that I've gotten, but more importantly, the inspiration that's going to come from our guests and later on also from our spoken word artists. I have to start with a funny. I've never seen a red carpet that I didn't like, at least not up to this point in my career, and that I didn't want to be on, whether I was invited or not. But this time around, at a premiere just a couple of days ago, I experienced a completely different experience around a red carpet, which was actually blue. Nonetheless, a picture was taken of me, several were taken of me on that carpet, and then one was posted on the internet. I took that picture and forwarded it, and I took the opportunity to not only share about what this was about, but most people that know me, they usually comment on how I'm always smiling in all the pictures. Every picture, you're always smiling. In this picture, I wasn't smiling. And this is what I wrote on Facebook when I shared this picture. Talk about wearing your emotions on your sleeves, or all over my face for that matter. Those of you who know me know that I believe that our face tells so much about what we are thinking and feeling. So many of you also say that in most of my pictures, not just the ones I post, but the ones that get posted by other people, I am smiling. This picture is an exception. And so was this moment. When I arrived at the ArcLight Cinemas Hollywood for the premiere of the film Sharkwater Extinction with the Life Changes Show executive producer Dorothy Lee Donahue and realized there was a red carpet, which was actually blue, I said to Dorothy, "I don't want to walk the red carpet. Do you?" And Dorothy responded, "No, but Rob would want us to." She was referring to Rob Stewart, the award-winning filmmaker of Revolution and Sharkwater, who lost his life making the film we were there to see. Just as she was saying that, Brian Stewart, the film producer and Rob Stewart's father, sees Dorothy and realizes we weren't making our way to the carpet and hugs Dorothy and says, "Thank you for coming. You have to walk the red carpet. Rob would have wanted that." After Dorothy had walked the carpet and just before I walked on this picture, and this picture was taken, I saw Sandy Stewart, Rob's mother, standing right next to me. Though I had seen her a couple of times since her son passed, realizing that this film was not only about saving sharks and in a sense saving our oceans and planet, but it was in the memory of her son. And I got emotional. And then the picture was taken. Those of you who know me know that I also put my heart into every interview we do. And I gotta suck it up because this Monday, tonight, we have Sandy Stewart and Brian Stewart as guests on our show. This will be the first time in the 513 episodes that we interviewed parents of a previous guest who had since passed. And talk about sucking it up. A couple of my biggest takeaways so far are these: that one person truly does make a difference, that we all can be that one person around so many needs in the world, that we need sharks and we need to be aware and to be proactive now. And one of the most unexpected takeaways is this, that if two parents who had the worst thing that could ever happen to a parent could pick themselves up and do this, then there is truly nothing we humans can't do. I highly recommend you see Sharkwater and Sharkwater Extinction. Go to sharkwater.com or Sharkwater on Facebook, and let's do this. We'll be right back with Brian and Sandy Stewart right after this on The Life Changes Show.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sierra Campbell, and Alan Roderick Jones on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
I'm Philippe Voltaggio, and I'm here with Mark Lejeune. And Mark, you knew Rob Stewart as well.
Anybody that came into contact with Rob was moved and influenced, and he was a friend to so many, and some of those friends even walked on two legs. he touched the entire, I mean, we talk about Sharkwater, but he touched every living being, and that was his mission. And yet he did it with grace and joy, and I'm honored to be able to participate in the work that Brian and Sandy are carrying forward and helping to keep the message going.
Indeed. We've titled the show Sharkwater Extinction, Let's Save the Sharks, with guests, award-winning filmmaker Rob Stewart's parents, now turned producers, Sandy Stewart and Brian Stewart. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thanks so much.
Thank you for making Rob, and thank you for making this film. The event the other night was mind-blowing in so many ways. The whole experience from way back when Rob started Revolution, people started to join in, like, I want to support this. Then Sharkwater came and more people wanted to support this. And now this, so many people talking about it and wanting to support this. How does that feel for you too?
We're so proud of Rob, what he accomplished in his life. I mean, with Sharkwater, he brought the issue of shark finning to the world stage. With Revolution, the issue of ocean acidification, it was going to be much worse than climate change. He did so much in such a short period of time. We're just so proud of him and want to make sure as many people as possible have the opportunity to see his film. And that's what he wanted. He wanted everybody just to learn about the ocean creatures, learn about the world and saving it.
Yeah, he really believed that if he could teach people how beautiful it was underneath the sea, they would actually want to fight for it. I mean, there's a fact we talk about quite often when we do certain interviews and so on, and it's the fact that there's only something like 6.5 million divers in the world today. We have a population that's 7.5 billion people. Mm. There's only 21 million people that go snorkeling. So 26 or 27 million or 28 million people in the world look underneath the surface of the sea. And you put that in light of the massive population, they don't know anything. So he believed it was his job, and other filmmakers and friends of his who've taken up the mantle, it was his job to educate people and show them. That's why, you know, people have to see what's underneath the sea to learn to love it. And that was his job. And, you know, I think that's really why, you know, when he passed, there was no choice for us. He left us with this job to do, and it has been a real journey to get to this point.
Your journey started obviously long a time ago, but with his films in particular, you both were executive producers. You were involved at least from the business side of it.
The business side, yeah.
And now?
Now pretty much all of it. You know, we don't do the editing. We don't do it, but we spend a lot of time in the editing room with the editor, Nick Hector. He did an amazing job calling through 400-plus hours of footage and trying to find Rob's voice, and that was an extraordinary feat. I mean, people came up to me after the screen the other night, had not heard from Rob in 2 years, obviously, and said they were blown away that Rob could, you know, be the voice of the film and be the narrator all the way through it. That's a feat that will go down in history as one of the greatest accomplishments of an editor of all time. I mean, and not everyone knows that. I mean, that's one of those things you don't go out touting from the top of the mountain. And he's a very humble guy, and he said he has never worked with a filmmaker more dedicated to perfection and finding the shot than Rob Stewart. And he said he had to do it out of love for Rob. And this guy's done 130 films, worked with some of the best directors in the world, and he said nothing has been a better experience than working with Rob on this film.
Mm. When we first... after the accident, we were in a state of shock. We didn't know what to do and went through the motions and, you know, getting his body back and doing the funeral back in Toronto, which is where we're from, you know, took some time. And then after that, it was, you know, what do we do now? So we had somebody look through the 400 hours of footage to say, you know, what's there? How much of the film is actually shot? And then once they did that, we had somebody go back and say, well, how much of the footage includes Rob? We can't really do a Rob film without Rob. Mm-hmm. He had a style to him. You know, he narrates his films. You know, mm-hmm. he's in it here and there, and he takes you on a journey without preaching. You just pick up his messaging just by walking along beside him. And once we went through that, we realized, okay, you know, there's
hope.
We can do this. And met Nick Hector and Sterling Gunnarsson, who are award-winning filmmakers, and they jumped into the project. And both of them said, everybody that's worked on this film actually has said, they felt like Rob was with them.
Guiding them.
If there was a point where they weren't sure what to do, you know, overnight, the answer would just emerge.
Yeah, I mean, this may sound a little bit odd, but I think your audience would appreciate it. Both the editor and the musical composer are very laid back, little stodgy, older guys. Very conservative, and they said, both of them had said at separate occasions, totally unrelated, that last night they were struggling with what to do. And Rob came and sat at the end of the bed and told him what he wanted to do. And that's what they went and did. And that was 2 months before the composer told us this. And the composer said, I don't understand any of this stuff. I don't understand it at all. And he said, but Rob was in the editing suite with me when telling me how to change the music the way he wanted it to be done. So I'm going, okay. And
wow.
And these are guys that, you know, don't even want, they'd probably hit me if they told me I told you that story. but yeah, extraordinary.
Wow. Just so people understand, this is after Rob's passing that they said they saw him or he was in the room with them or... Wow.
Yeah.
They all felt like he was guiding them through whatever role they were playing.
Wow. one of the things that actually came to mind while you were talking, and I made the connection how so few divers and all that you were saying, I thought about, for some reason, the Middle Ages or beyond that, where people thought that there were monsters in the ocean. And we were led to believe that those monsters were...
Sharks.
Sharks. Yeah. Rob spent his entire life fighting the Jaws effect. The fact that, you know, Jaws was such a successful book, such a successful movie. It was, you know, so well done for what it was. But it created the impression in people that sharks were actually really, really monsters. And Peter Benchley, you know, towards the end of his life, was really remorseful that he'd ever written Jaws because it created such...
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah,
he's now got awards out there, the Peter Benchley Award. Rob actually won one for, you know, a shark movie that changes the perception.
And his wife
sharks.
Is continuing his legacy by saying that his dying words, I wish he never made the bloody movie. And the reality is that's what he believed. He did. He realized he perpetuated a belief that all sharks are dangerous. And in fact, sharks are not dangerous. I mean, your toaster is more dangerous than a shark.
But we're still battling that, you know, every day. But, you know, the world's perception is changing. I think that's probably one of Rob's biggest legacies. You know, in his movies, he's hugging sharks, he's playing with sharks, he's patting them. And I think he's changed the world's perception of sharks. And it's hard to go into a kid's clothing store these days without seeing sharks on every piece of clothing, shark shoes, shark hats. So I think people are learning to love them.
There's a lot that he's changed, and when we come back, we'll talk about that. But before we get off the subject, yes, that was a big juxtaposition to have grown up seeing people in cages down there filming sharks. And one of the very first scenes is you see Rob by himself with just no shirt on, just swimming out there, petting them. Wow. And then later on with a great white, right? Yeah.
We just got sent a shot today from Pablo Garcia, who did a beautiful memorial tribute to Rob just after he passed, which you can play sometime, but it's quite beautiful. And Pablo sent a shot today. He was at the screening the other night, and he said, I found a shot of Rob with a great white I want you to see. And, of course, there's Rob outside of the cage, right beside them. I mean, he's closer to the great white than you and I are sitting right now.
Wow.
And he's got the camera there right in the space. And the shark cage is behind him. He's not even close to the shark cage.
Wow.
As Rob said, though, every time you see this now, and this has happened probably since Sharkwater, every time you see someone in a cage with a great white, there is somebody outside the cage filming the person in the cage seeing it. So, you know, people don't think this way, but that's very common. And these are the guys like Rob and Andy, Andy Casagrandes and Brock and these other people that are following his footsteps. These guys are there. Sharks are not dangerous. I mean, we have to get over this.
Wow. When we come back, already major changes have happened thanks to Rob and the film and the team and everybody that's involved. And of course, Brian and Sandy. When we come back, we'll talk more with Brian and Sandy Stewart. And again, a little later on, our spoken word artist, Christopher Rivas, will be joining us here on the Life Changes Show after this.
Hey guys, this is Michaela. So I'm here to tell you about the DNA Institute. If you haven't heard of it already, I wanted to let you in on it because it completely changed my life. A few years ago, I was 30 pounds overweight. I wanted a career, good friends, a loving family, and financial success, and I didn't have any of it, so I ate. Within 6 months, the DNA Institute treatment not only helped me lose the 30 pounds, it also rebalanced my hormones, healed my metabolic and digestive system, and made my higher functioning brain so loud it became impossible to overeat when I was full. Don't we all want that? So many of my friends and family turned to the Institute after they saw my success. All of them lost their desired weight, ranging from 8 to 60 pounds. I found this to be so different than anything I'd ever tried before, and it was easier than anything I'd ever done. It's not a supplement or a diet pill. It's a genuine, doctor-prescribed, custom medical treatment made just for you. It doesn't matter what your situation is or how much weight you have to lose. I believe the Institute will get you to your goal. My experience is that this is more than just a weight loss system. It's a biohack to a better way of looking, feeling, and living. When I started, I had never heard of the DNA Institute, but the fact that they've been in Beverly Hills since 1982 gave me a real peace of mind. Now that you've heard of them, click on the DNA ad at lifechangeshow.com and get your customized formula started today. Change your life like I changed mine.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at lifechangesnetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guests, Brian and Sandy Stewart, parents of Rob Stewart and producers of Shark Water Extinction. Now, I said when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the changes that already happened. During the break, I just happened to mention how I forgot to refer to this as a documentary throughout the whole time I was talking about it and even the hashtags we did on it and all that, because it never dawned on me it was a documentary because it felt like watching a movie. And that led to learning how he changed documentary filmmaking.
Right.
So please share.
Rob, when he was small, just used to love nature shows, you know, anything with animals and under the water. But what he didn't like was the talking heads. It was boring, and they would narrate it very, very slowly so you would get to the end of that beautiful piece of footage. So when he set out to make Sharkwater, he made something that was completely different. And you go on an adventure with him. He doesn't preach. You'll just understand his feelings and his point of view just by going on the adventure with him. His movies always had a story. He always had an upbeat ending because he was a real optimist. He always felt that altogether we could change the world. We just needed to galvanize everybody that cared. So yeah, you would never have talking heads.
Yeah, when you saw some of the notes that Rob had, he never once had a frame in a box with this happy face in it saying, "Talk, you know, skip to the scientist or listen." It never was going to happen. It always had to be share the experience with me, and through sharing that experience, you're going to learn what I learned. And I think that's why he became a storyteller, and much different than a documentary filmmaker. He
always
was telling
had
a story.
And you know, music mattered. He loved music, yeah. So you know, in all of his films, you'll hear spectacular music. And at the end, you know, with the composer, he always sat with them for weeks, you know, getting exactly what he wanted out of it, you know, interspersed with, you know, great music cuts.
We have an expression in Canada that says it sounds Canadian. And filmmaking in Canada, to a certain degree, you can tell a Canadian film, especially if you're in the film industry, and we've been in the associated industry for a long time. And that was one of the things that Rob was never accused of sounding as a Canadian filmmaker. He cared about the Foley. He cared about the sound of bubbles. He cared about all the things that make a film really come together so you don't notice it. And that was how detailed he was. And that's, you know, if you saw his notes, that's exactly what he told himself. I've got to make sure I nail this with the bubbles in this. And, you know, and when the great white bumps into the tank, what's it going to sound like? He thought about stuff like this.
He spent a lot of time on that background sound so that everybody, you know, when you're immersed in that beautiful photography, you're there. You're hearing exactly the same sounds.
You're there.
So lots of time on that.
So it's amazing, miraculous that it seems like Rob is narrating the whole film. Like this is the film and he had the script and all you did was follow the script. That's amazing in itself. However, at the same time, it could be watched and the emotions felt without sound. I think people could be inspired even if they can't understand English until it's translated.
You know, fortunately,
it's coming though. It's going to be in Latin American Spanish in about 2 weeks. And you'll be able to order that off of iTunes and the other platforms.
It's in French.
It's going to be subtitled for a bunch of different languages. There's a dub in French as well.
It's going to be Cantonese and Mandarin, hopefully for the Chinese market.
And it's going to be dubbed into German because he had a huge following in Germany, huge following in France as well.
What I'm getting at is that the images are so powerful and that you don't need words. We're getting it. And it's interesting that you mentioned China. That is the home of where Shark Fin Soup, I think, was born, right?
Mm-hmm. Probably, yes. And, you know, now China has such an exploding large middle class, as does a lot of parts of Asia, that it's widely exploited, the Shark Fin Soup, all through Asia.
You know, and to China, Shark Fin Soup is defined as flying wing soup. So the Chinese don't even know, quite honestly, that it's shark that they're actually eating. Mm. So ignorance, again, people don't know. And if they only knew, they may stop. But fortunately, we're making some headway in China. We're going to be doing a premiere, hopefully, on March the 28th in Hong Kong, which is the source where everything gets funneled through into mainland China, where all the fins are traded. So we're doing things that we can to combat that problem. But really, it's about education. Because the young people in China are aware, and they're the ones that are saying no to it. It's the parents that are still holding under that tradition that they've obtained a certain level of wealth and influence. And shark fin soup used to be a sign of that. So they've held on to that belief, and we have to get them to move away from that.
But it's making inroads in China. Rob actually released a cut-down version of shark water in China that was seen by 100 million people. The Chinese government has stopped serving shark fin soup at their banquets.
Wow.
Yeah, I just noticed something about Xiao Ming and what he's been doing.
Oh, Xiao Ming did a
promo spot for shark water.
Yes.
Wow.
And he's been a constant supporter. But airlines, Cathay Pacific, you know, won't transport shark fins. A lot of the courier companies, FedEx.
Wow. You talk about education. This stunned me when I learned from the film that the shark fins actually have no flavor.
Right.
No
none.
Flavor.
What?
None whatsoever.
And they dry.
They flavor
out.
The soup with chicken stock.
It's crazy. Yeah,
like a thickener.
It's beyond. You know, I think if you wanted to trace it back, and we all surmise why this would happen, sharks were these unique creatures, very fast. No one could catch them. they were intimidating, I suppose. And I guess to catch a shark and cut off its fin and serve it as a delicacy after it's been dried and so on was a status symbol. I mean, I got the shark, and that's when there were billions of sharks. Today, you know, since shark water came up, we've wiped out over a billion sharks. When is it ever going to be right to wipe out a billion of any living creature and say, let's keep doing it?
Well, actually, can't keep doing it, right?
Can't.
No. Eventually, Rob came to us and said he was going to do the next movie. And we said, you know, what are you doing? And he said, sequel to Sharkwater. And he said, why not Revolution? It's about ocean acidification. The whole oceans are going down.
Right.
And he said, sharks don't have that much time.
Wow.
If I don't do this now, by the time we figure out the ocean acidification, they'll be gone.
Well, because something else I learned is baby sharks are being killed, and baby sharks take years before they get to maturation.
Oh, some of them don't reproduce till they're 30. And then they have one or two babies.
Wow.
And in parts of the world where they've, you know, so overfished the adult population, they're now dipping down and just scooping up the babies. And you can see some heartbreaking scenes in Panama where they're going into the nursery areas, and with the gill nets, they're getting little tiny 20-inch, you know, baby hammerheads. And fishing those.
And they actually slice them up and serve them as scallops. Because a baby hammerhead's diameter is about the same size as a scallop.
Wow.
So they slice them in these, you know, half-inch to one-inch thick things. And they're sold in markets as scallops. And people don't know. So, you know, people will do anything when it comes down to exploiting resources. What we have to do is stop it. I mean, babies never get a chance to. You're destroying the future generations is what they're doing. Mm-hmm.
And it has an effect that is exponential, because without the sharks, then all these other things happen.
Well, they're the top of the food chain in the oceans. They're the apex predators. And they found in areas when you fish out the sharks, the other fish swim further away from the water in Cabo Verde. They like to fish near the shoreline, and they can't do that anymore because the fish have all left. The sharks were keeping them close to the shore.
Wow.
And if you don't have the sharks, you know, feeding off of those smaller populations of fish, you know, the smaller and smaller fish eat all the plankton, and the plankton gives us 70% of our gas, or oxygen in the world. It's super important.
Wow.
70% of our
oxygen comes from the ocean.
So this is not just save the sharks, this is save our lives.
This is called Save the Humans, which is Rob's book. And, you know, quite honestly, Rob caught on to this really early on, and that was his passion. On pretty well every project, the message was, we can't keep destroying the natural world. And we're destroying it so quickly now, it will not have a chance to rebound. You know, some people are saying, I ran into a NASA scientist at the screen the other night, and he said, you know, I've watched Rob, I talked to Rob, we talked about working on projects together, and he said, I had to see the movie tonight. And he said he's leaving NASA because he wants to go out and prove to mankind, and he's got to do it now. We got 12 years left. Science knows we got 12 years left to create balance with nature again. Or we're going to be so out of sync, it's beyond repair.
But we have to say that so many people that followed Rob and were inspired by Rob and learned about the shark finning issues, so much has happened since that movie came out. 12 million square miles have now been created as marine preserves. You know, a lot of the world has laws against shark finning. There's awareness absolutely everywhere. But one of the reasons Rob wanted to do this film is we're still killing 150 million sharks a year. And although you can't fin them in a lot of places, you're still allowed to import them.
Oh.
Yeah, and one of the problems is that, you know, and I've said this numerous times, it is the Wild West out there. I mean, outside the territorial boundaries of each country where they can fish their own waters, as soon as you get outside that, in fact, a lot of places, they still fish inside territorial boundaries. It is the Wild West. People do whatever they want. They fish to, you know, to whatever capacity they want. The laws, there are no laws, there's no treaties, there's no governing body that monitors what goes on in the open ocean.
Wow.
So we have this massive, I mean, you're talking about tens of thousands of fishing boats that are fishing in open waters every day. They never have to go to port anymore because they have transshipment boats that go out and meet them in the middle of the ocean, take off their catch, and they just dump things. So this is why, you know, we're destroying the ocean that we depend on for survival. And it's out of sight, and there's no rules. CITES, you know, is a governing body that suggests to countries that certain species should be protected. They can't enforce that. It's a suggestion. You sign your CITES treaty on the basis, yeah, I think you're right. I think protecting scalloped hammerhead is a good idea. We'll put it on our list. It doesn't stop anybody from doing anything. And when I spoke to, you know, I'm in Canada, we spoke to the senators, and, you know, they're telling us, well, you know, one of the guys from the Fisheries Department says, well, Interpol takes care of all that. Interpol have no boats on the water. They don't go out looking for pirate fishing boats. They do nothing to stop this.
And he probably believed that, right? Or
no, this federal minister, his Department of Fisheries, believed that, yeah, somebody's taking care of it. They have to. The UN, no. There's no UN governing body that patrols the open ocean. And this is where, as citizens, we have to say, well, we've got this wrong. It's time to change it.
So in Canada and the U.S., there's a big push for legislation. And I think in the U.S., it's Humane Society International and Oceana, plus a host of other people that are supporting it. And, you know, similar groups in Canada. The U.K. is pushing through legislation as well. It's really, you know, we have to ban the importation of fins. And, oh, a story came out in the U.K. this week. They did DNA testing in a lot of the fish and chips in the U.K. It's actually shark, just labeled something else.
Wow.
Yeah, we did an interview with someone from the U.K.
Wow.
So when you go and buy fish and chips pretty well throughout Europe now, you can be assured that the chances of getting shark are probably 90-10 in favor of getting shark wanted it.
Wow.
It's everywhere.
Wow.
Another reason Rob wanted to do this movie, though, is that sharks are turning up in other products.
Yeah.
He did some testing on a lot of products. They found it in cosmetics. It's labeled squalene. It could be vegetable squalene, but it's most likely shark liver oil. And it was found in more than 50% of the cat foods that were tested. It's, you know, on your cat food label, it says ocean whitefish.
Ocean whitefish.
Yeah, yeah. So we need a movement. The consumer wouldn't know.
Rock salmon.
Rock
salmon is basically shark. I mean, there's 19 or 20 names. You can find them on our website, and they're being sold across the counter. And you're buying as a consumer, you think you're buying an ocean whitefish, which sounds like a, you know, it could be a swordfish, could be, but it's an ocean whitefish. That's a shark. And what you're getting, by the way, is an apex predator that's full of toxins, which has been proven and tested all over the world now, because the apex predator eats down the food chain, and those toxins go right back up, and the toxins are, neurotoxins are being found in shark.
Oh,
this is not good for pregnant women now. They even have labels on a number of products where they do sell sharks in some U.S. grocery store chains. Pregnant women and children should not consume shark.
Interesting. When we come back, a little bit more on this conversation and also learning how we can support, how each of us can do something. There is a website, sharkwater.com, and there is so much information and also so many different ways that you can get involved. Sharkwater.com, that's where you can also see the film. It's on iTunes, and it's going to be everywhere that where films are available. It's also in theater, so you can check out the website to find it there. And then also become a fan of the Facebook page. Facebook, Sharkwater. We'll be right back with Brian and Sandy. We'll be joined by our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, in this next segment for a very special Ask Dorothy, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and the little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com. You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Barbara Morrison, and Kyle Cease at our archive on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guests, Sandy Stewart and Brian Stewart, as producers of Sharkwater, as parents of Rob Stewart, and the latest film, Sharkwater Extinction. There is some good news here. A lot of it.
There is some good news. People are making changes, and I guess, you know, Ask your friends, you know, sea shark water extinction. Ask your friends to see it. It's a great adventure.
Have parties. And conversations.
And talk about it.
Yeah.
Rob believed the greatest job in the world was saving the world. You got up every day and you were upbeat and you could only do great things. And it should be fun.
He had a saying that what you want to do in life, if you can, is find something you're passionate about and find what you're best at doing. Smash them together and create a life of meaning and purpose. And for Rob, it was helping save the world in any way he possibly could. And I think all the people, I mean, we still get thousands of notes every day from people saying, Rob changed my life. And he's basically inspired people to take that mantle up and carry it. You know, there's been 90 chapters of Finn Free that have been set up around the world. He started something called Shark Free, which we're now moving forward with. All these are very positive steps, and it all comes down to asking intelligent questions about what you're consuming. You know, if you don't know what kind of fish it is, dig a little deeper and ask, you know, that's all.
And you should have fun doing it. You should look at it doing it. Rob was really, really young. And it's great seeing young people jump into this and follow in his footsteps. I think it's one of his biggest legacies, the number of people that will carry on the work that he was doing.
I could see a lot of people, influencers, like, for example, you mentioned lipstick or cosmetics, but lipstick in particular, how an influencer can get out there and say, hey, I've stopped using this brand because of, or invite the brand to stop using.
Absolutely. And I think that's probably one of the best. Influencers can actually make that change we want to see. If they would step up and say, look, ask the manufacturer, if you got squalene in your product, ask your manufacturer, write them a letter, send a letter to the CEO. Send a letter to whoever you can or get a hold of them in any capacity you can and say, please stop doing this because I want to continue using your product, but I can't if you're not going to take squalene out of the product.
Mm. Now, two big companies that have stopped using Shark Squalene are L'Oreal and Lever Brothers. Yeah. They've taken it completely out of their products. So there's light and hope everywhere.
We're winning the battle.
Nice.
We're winning the battle.
And I'm glad you said that because I have to say, as inspiring as the film was, and it was very inspiring, and that if that would have been the end, that would have been great. But then there was the panel discussion, which was then even the next step of inspiring to watch you two and your team, or a small part of your team, and share like you shared.
Yeah, Team Sharkwater has been set up with the members that helped Rob finish the movie. And shot with them all over the world.
Who consider him a brother.
And he has brothers in cities all around the world. So Team Sharkwater is going to be this massive force that's going to continue to do good to help educate and inform. I mean, my dream, if I live long enough to see it, would be to have Team Sharkwater members in every classroom in the world helping spread the message. Because the young people are the ones that we've destroyed the world for. They will never see the world that we've seen. But they could see a world that has been changed. And I think they're the ones that are going to demand it.
Absolutely.
One of the people talking about in the David Suzuki Foundation said people often, when they're looking at the environment, see the death and destruction. And what Rob did was teach people to see the beauty of what was left and
fight for it.
And fight for it.
Well, there's so much beauty here in what you all have done and what you all have inspired in the and bringing or keeping the team together and growing it, actually, with the various foundations that Rob started and the ones that you're working with now. Thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you for being here and sharing the way
you did.
Thank you
for having us.
Oh, thank you for having us.
It means the world to us. Thank you.
What a pleasure. And with that, we have a very special Ask Dorothy segment. Mark?
Yeah, our Ask Dorothy segment is a little different tonight, as it includes a thank you from one of Rob Stewart's friends who saw you at the Sharkwater Extinction premiere. From Julie. Dorothy, it was so good to see you at the premiere. I'm so grateful for the work Rob and you did together. It has had such an impact on so many who miss Rob dearly, but are able to connect with him now. You certainly changed my life, my perspective on life, love, and energy, and this world have totally shifted 180 degrees with the connection to Rob I've experienced. I never would have believed in this before. It also helped a massive amount when my mom transitioned this year. So thank you for all you do. Special thanks for the affirmations. I have made a copy of your affirmations for many who love Rob, and we all cherish them.
Julie, I'm so happy you mentioned Rob's affirmations when we connected at the premiere and how you'd lost them and then found them after asking Rob, where are they? you immediately came across them. I knew the moment you said Rob's affirmations that you were talking about the daily intentions that I give a copy of to all of my clients, and I'm so happy that you share them with many. If any of our listeners want a copy for themselves, then please write me at loveandmiracles@gmail.com. And thank you, Julie, and the Shark Angels, for all you are doing to carry on Rob's mission. And now as to how I help people connect with their loved ones after death, it's really quite simple. The departed have talked with me since I was a child, and so I understand that love never dies. However, it was only about 10 years ago that I ran across a beautiful poem by Henry Scott Holland that explains how to do it. I shared this beautiful poem with Rob's friends after his death, and I'll share it with our audience now. Death is nothing at all. I've only slipped away to the next room. I am I, and you are you. Whatever we were to each other, that we still are. Call me by my old familiar name. Speak to me in the easy way which you always used. Put no difference into your tone. Wear no forced air of solemnity or sorrow. Laugh as we always laughed at the little jokes we enjoyed together. Play, smile, think of me, pray for me. Let my name be ever the household word that it always was. Let it be spoken without effect, without the trace of a shadow on it. Life means all that it ever meant. It is the same that it ever was. There is absolute, unbroken continuity. Why should I be out of mind? Because I'm out of sight. I am but waiting for you, for an interval, somewhere very near, just around the corner. All is well. And I want to give my heartfelt thanks to Brian and Sandy for being here tonight and all involved in completing Rob's mission, as this has kept many connected with him, and Rob's work lives on as he lives on in the hearts of all who love him.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back with our spoken word artist, Christopher Rivas, here on the Life Changes Show right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@LifeChangesNetwork.com.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guests, Brian and Sandy Stewart. And joining us in the studio is a storyteller. He's a speaker. He's an actor. He's a spoken word artist. Interesting. Tonight's been about storytelling, and it's been a storyteller who told stories in film, Rob Stewart. And now Christopher Rivas is joining us. Mr. Storyteller, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Hi, y'all.
Hi. It's very special to have you here. And it, by the way, congratulations. I learned that you have won several awards since I last saw you. So yeah. More power to you.
Thanks.
As a social entrepreneur and all kinds of things. You've been on several shows, Grey's Anatomy and da-da-da. And that's Shameless or Normal.
Lots of da-da-da. So just keep it that way.
That's really fun. But I'm enjoying looking at this. So interestingly, also, one of the things that really struck my attention is one of your YouTube videos where you were talking about something that you've developed into a full show. Tell us about that.
Yeah. The Real James Bond Was Dominican is a play that is currently touring the country. And it's James Bond was based on a Dominican man named Porfirio Rubirosa, who was twice the richest man in the world, married to Barbara Hutton, Doris Duke, and many more women. Best friends with Ian Fleming, smuggled thousands of Jews out of Hitler's Germany, best friends with Sinatra and JFK, and just this everywhere man, and now he's nowhere to be found. And when I discovered this, it was another sort of, as a brown man in the world, as a Dominican man, here was another body that had been taken from us and another story that had been forgotten.
Now, when you say nowhere to be found, you mean as far as history is concerned, he's just been wiped clean.
Correct.
And so we all know James Bond.
We think we know James Bond.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. We all think we know James Bond. Yeah.
And so you're very passionate about this, obviously, and you share that with passion. But you do this on a lot of different subjects. What inspired you to take up storytelling in that way?
Oh man, was I inspired or what? Or did it find me? I think everything I was always doing was trying to find myself and this story. Whether I was acting or writing or poetry or, if I'm being honest, one day I went on this crazy trip with this girl to Big Sur, and we did a bunch of mushrooms, and all our stuff was stolen while it was on mushrooms, and we found it all in the dark, and it was this crazy wild adventure, and it was the first time where I felt like I have to tell people what happened. I knew I had something to say. I knew it was more than just funny and like, oh, that's like a cool story. Like, I knew it was profound and special, and I had to share it. And I think when you make a proclamation like that to the world, it presents you with an opportunity. And then all of a sudden I won this event, and then I'm teaching friends for free. I'm begging friends to take my storytelling class, which they did. And then that free class turns into a $15 class to a $30 class. And the next thing you know, I'm working with NGOs and refugees and the WWE and traveling the world teaching storytelling. Yeah.
And speaking of opportunities, you suggested an opportunity and then jumped at the opportunity to why are you laughing? Because I know why I'm laughing.
Yeah, I know why I'm laughing. I said I love a theme. Like, I love to be inspired. I don't want to just tell me what you want me to tell a story about. I was informed about Rob and about who's coming to speak today in this story. And it was just 2 days ago.
Yeah, I'll give you inspiration.
Yeah.
How's this? Sharkwater, go.
And I just said yes, because that's usually a more powerful answer than no. And I'm here and we'll see what came out of me. And
we knew you'd be here, and we're excited to hear what you have prepared for tonight. What did you title this?
Oh, nothing.
Let's you didn't even think of a title.
No, let's call it Rob.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do that.
Here is Christopher Rivas performing Rob live on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo.
Hey, y'all. Like we said, I'm asked to tell this story. I prefer to tell stories based on themes. That's what I do. I share some sort of personal story, and some sort of magic is supposed to be absorbed in them and from them. I want to be clear. I don't know Rob. I didn't know Rob. I said, sure. Again, to be clear, my association with the ocean is nothing but respect. I love the occasional ocean night swim. It scares me and enlivens me all at once. That's my limit. I don't desire to know the ocean secrets, but I do acknowledge there is mad ocean secrets and wisdom, more unknown than known. As far as sharks, I love me some Shark Week. I think it's great. I think sharks are victimized and poorly misunderstood because of Jaws. We talked about that. I mean, it's their house and we're just visitors, right? Personally, I consider myself a psychonaut. The inner workings are what make me tick and go and want more. I think Rob was a psychonaut and an oceanaut. A seeker, an explorer, a passionate seeker, selfless, courageous, brave, pushing limits and boundaries and fighting for the known and the unknown. Diving into Rob's life was a deep, deep rabbit hole or shark hole, you get it. And I dove into this hole and was completely smitten. I mean, here was this man with a deep, deep legacy, a passion that touched everyone he encountered, myself included, because he was doing what he loved. A love that came through a screen, grabbed you and shook you, and let me tell you, that is not easy to do. So here I am, I'm reading these articles, and I'm watching these interviews and movies, and I'm listening to his parents and the people who loved him, and I'm super inspired and motivated, and still, I don't know what story I'm going to tell. How do I honor this man? How do I honor his legacy? How do I share my truth? How does a Dominican boy from Queens, who rarely goes in the ocean, share his truth? How do I prove he didn't die, that he transformed, not just himself, but those around him? And the first thing I thought of was my mother, who suffered from severe depression, like real severe depression. No joke, she saw the world in black and white, not in color. I could win the lotto and she would still be sad kind of depression, a violent depression, a scary depression, I don't know what's next depression. She tried medicine for a while. She hated it. It gave her headaches. She couldn't think. She tried anything and everything, and then one day, out of nowhere, on her way home from work, she walks into a church. This is not me converting anyone to a church life. Just stay with me. She walks into this church on a Monday. She goes back on a Tuesday. She goes back on a Wednesday. She's smiling more. She's feeling better, and I start to take note. What's happening here? My mother's believing in something, and when you believe in something with all your being, incredible things begin to take place. And that's when I really started believing in the power of believing. I mean, you can believe in a glass of water, but if you cherish and love and believe in that water and know it'll keep you safe, I believe it just might keep you safe. I mean, 95% of the time, the placebo, the sugar pill, is more effective than the actual medicine. Because when it comes to being ready for change, when we believe with every fiber of our being that things transform, my mother began to transform right in front of me. The world then began to transform around her. Color and love returned to her eyes. I think of this when I think of Rob, because here is a man who believed. Believed in himself and everything he was fighting for with every fiber of his being. You don't have to know him to know that. It just poured off of him. This belief is currently still transforming the world for the better. The second thing I thought of is how, as a child, a brother of mine passed away when I was 13. He was hit by a car and essentially instantly brain dead. And how on that cold New York night in December, I wouldn't go into his hospital room no matter what. I just couldn't walk in there to see him. I couldn't handle it. And so for years, I keep playing that moment in my head over and over, how I should have had the courage to see him. Like, maybe that would have made a difference. If I walked into the room, it would have made a difference. That's what we do in tragedy. We wonder what could have been different. We tie ourselves up to the past trying to change it, to course correct. Spoiler, it never works. We never change the past. I say this because I now know Rob would never want you to be bound to the past. The future needs you present. I say this because I now know that forgiveness is the release of all hope for a better past and an accepting of the now, a pretty incredible now. I know that life isn't easy, but also it isn't slash doesn't have to be hard. I know Rob's death was a tragedy, but his memory and his legacy is a fierce celebration of living life to the fullest. I know that I was never entirely comfortable in my own skin. I know that watching Rob, he seemed to have that comfort in just being. That being brings me comfort. I know that life is precious. I know that wise man lives and a foolish man hopes. I know that sometimes our greatest gifts can be our weaknesses. I know that life is not a puzzle to be solved, but a moment to be lived, something to be savored and let go of all at once. I know that a flower that blooms and radiates hope within the rubble, The one that breaks through the concrete is sometimes the most powerful force there is. I know that Rob and his life and his films and his story are like that flower breaking through the rubble. I know that an ocean does not have to be perfect for us to love it. A human doesn't have to be perfect for us to love them. We all make mistakes and no such thing is perfect. I know that this life is not a tragedy. I know a life well lived like Rob's, for the benefit of all beings like Rob's, is a success. I know that an oceanaut who dies in the ocean is not a death but a transformation. We don't die personally, that's what I think. We leave the body and we transform, and sometimes what we transform is far beyond us. We transform a world for the better. I end with a quote by a poet named Buddy Wakefield. We were never tragedies. We were emergencies. If you call 911, tell them I'm having a fantastic time. Rob, cheers to you and your fantastic time. Thank you for your gifts and your heart. May we all remember your conservation work, your unparalleled devotion for the animals, your passion and your love for the ocean, and especially for life. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you. Christopher Rivas. I didn't expect that.
Thank you.
That was beautiful.
Where can we find you?
Christopher Rivas, storytelling.com. Okay. I'm sorry if there's sadness in here now.
Rivas is R-I-V-A-S. Yeah. Christopher Rivas.com.
My favorite quote is, I cried enough tears till I dug myself a permanent smile. It's by Hafiz.
Christopher Rivas, storytelling.com.
Correct.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So, all right. I'm back on. And we're all here, and thank you so much. You're still acting. You do classes. You do all kinds of things. So that's where they can learn about you. They can also find you at your YouTube channel. And
I go wherever life tells me to go.
Okay. Well, we're so glad that life told you to be here with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. We look forward to seeing more of you.
Thanks,
Christopher Rivas. What a show this has been. As a matter of fact, actually, before we say goodbye, it would be wonderful to mention Brian and Sandy, who's here with us in the studio that are special to you, besides all of us now.
My brother, Randy, and his wife, Gail, who have Rob's aunt and uncle, who have been amazingly supportive of us, and we're supportive of Rob. So they came down to be at the premiere and spent some time in Malibu at Rob's place. Mm.
How special to have you with us tonight. And with that, thank you again so much to both of you, Brian and Sandy Stewart. And thank you to you, Rob, since he's just in the other room. And thank you to all of you. With that, that is our show. Big thank you here to Brent Hahn at Studio NoHo for making us all come together in this special place and sound so good. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our producer and co-host, Mark Legere, I am your host, Filippo, reminding you that as life changes, as ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com. On Facebook at The Life Changes Show and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.
Wiring and